This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Earlier this month, Governor Scott Walker released his plans for the next biennial state budget. Under his proposal, the state's public schools would receive $650 million more in state funding. Most of this money would be divided among schools based on the number of students they serve. And some education advocates worry how this change could impact rural school districts in our state. Joining us to talk about the budget proposal and how it could impact regional schools are Chuck Norton, administrator for the Westby School District, Dave Bell, administrator for the Cashton School District, and Aaron Engel, administrator of the Gale Ettrick Trempealeau School District. And first, I just want to have each of you kind of start off by giving us a sense of kind of what your school district is like. So, Chuck, can you kind of tell us how many students the Westby School District serves and kind of historically, you know, how has funding been in your school district?
Well, currently we have 1,143 students in our district. It's been very stable as far as the numbers of students in our district for a good number of years. We go up a couple, we go down a couple, but overall we're pretty much flat, net neutral on students. Funding, this is my sixth year as superintendent in the Westby School District, and funding is a consistent challenge. There's competing for dollars, and those dollars are getting far and few between with the competition that's going on with the opportunities for school choice, which I believe in school choice. People should have an opportunity to do that, but how that really turns out in terms of affecting the ability for existing schools to fund themselves makes it very difficult. So in essence, what I'm saying is in many ways it's been difficult for 6 years to fund our schools. We've had to make reductions and adjustments, and any time there's a retirement or things like that, we look at that as an opportunity to possibly remake ourselves in a way that makes us more competitive and really meeting our budget challenges.
And Dave, you know, tell us a little bit about the Cashton School District.
Sure. Cashton School District is about a half hour southeast of La Crosse, and we have about 611 students, and our district is a little bit smaller than Westby, but a lot of the similarities echo some of the things that Chuck said. I think when you talk about funding, one thing is we feel lucky to have a supportive tax base that has helped us through some building referendums, and that's been a really positive thing for our school district. But our revenue limit has obviously been flat or have had small increases over the last few years, and that just puts stress on the system and a real prioritization of what things need to be done to make sure that we continue to offer the services to our students, whether it's innovative 4K and innovative early literacy practices through high school and personalized learning options for our kids, and really trying to find ways to help our students realize what their goals are and move forward. And all of that, it takes creativity, and we like to be creative. We like to find those ways to fund those opportunities. And I guess definitely in the last 3 or 4 years, we've had to find more creative ways to do that.
And Aaron, tell us about the Gale Ettrick Trempealeau School District.
Gale Ettrick Trempealeau School District is located about 30 miles north of La Crosse, and we are made up of three different communities: Galesville, Ettrick, and Trempealeau. And we have elementary schools in each of those. We serve about 1,380 students. And we also have had to deal with changes in the budgeting and the state funding formula over the last couple of years. We've cut hundreds of thousands of dollars out of our budget in order to make ends meet. But fortunately, we have creative administrators and teachers that are willing to go the extra mile to make things work.
And Aaron, can you talk a little bit about, what is kind of the formula for how public schools are funded? You know, what are the factors that are taken into account when dividing up state funding?
The state has a revenue limit that school districts must comply with. We can only bring in so much money per student, and the student population is the most important portion of that. So if you have steady, stable enrollment, like we've had at Gale Ettrick Trempealeau, your funding is kind of predictable and consistent. But if you've had declining enrollment, like a lot of school districts have been, you're losing money every year as a result of that funding formula. The state gives you a portion of the money that you have to fund your school, and the rest you can levy up to that limit from the local population, your tax base.
Chuck, are there changes that need to be made to, before we talk about kind of the proposals in the next state budget, you know, I think it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on, are there changes that are needed in this basic formula?
I think most notably is, for one thing, there is no basic threshold in our state for minimum funding of students per pupil. There is a great need for that. Our state constitution, so to speak, requires that we have a free and appropriate public education, which is more of a special education term, but I like to apply it to all students. That really should give us a minimum threshold. But beyond that, there needs to be, as Aaron mentioned, the revenue limits really have no automatic increase for, let's say, cost of living increases. So that's something that really, there were those, by the way, for many years. However, that's been locked in for quite a while. So revenue limits really tie our hands in terms of our ability to raise funds to operate our schools.
And Dave, you know, As a small school district in our state, how do you think you are impacted by this, the ways that schools are regularly funded?
Sure. You know, one thing I'd say is, you know, the how we're funded is kind of complex, and so it makes it challenging for us to have conversations with our local tax payers on how that formula rolls out in Cashton compared to Westby or compared to GET, because it's a little bit different in each place. And we talk a little bit about the revenue limit, and that's obviously an important component. And so how much property value you have within your school district per kid really drives that quantity of aid within the revenue limit formula. And so so some school districts benefit from that, and other school districts it's a challenge. And I think one thing that's changed over the last 2 or 3 years, really the last budget cycle and now this budget cycle, is the increase in categorical aids, which aren't tied to that revenue limit. And so those categorical aids are outside of that sort of equalizing factor that was the reason why we have the revenue limit, was to say, well, there are property poor areas and there are property rich areas, and we need to have some type of equalizing factor in place to make sure that the state is supporting kids no matter where they live. And now we have categorical aid, and it's per pupil categorical aid, so it's just purely based on the amount of kids that you have, and any revenue is appreciated from the district because we're able to use it to support our programs. But it's just it's hard to know, first of all, you know, from budget cycle to budget cycle, if that's going to be there or not. It's also hard to explain to the local taxpayer in Cashin who's busy working and doing lots of different things, supporting their kids, doing whatever it is that they do, to now we have to explain to them how we have per pupil increases on our revenue limit, and we also have per pupil categorical aid, and we also have other types of categorical aid. And they look at the headlines and they hear whether schools are being cut or being increased, and it's hard for them to know how that boils down for us in Cashton. So it's definitely our responsibility as the leaders of the school to help them better understand that. But I think that the current system, it gets a little muddled. So even when it's good news, it's not always it doesn't always affect districts in exactly the same way, and so that also gets hard, because if the message is, oh well, there's all this more aid, well, shouldn't that be good for us? But you know, state aids are a huge component of our the way that we fund our school, but there's also the local tax levy, and then there's also federal grants for other programs that take place, and so those things all come into play.
Can you give some examples of some of the categories that these aids are, you know,
sure,
the categorical aid is provided in?
Yep. So we have transportation aid, and we have common school funds that support our libraries, and we have the per pupil categorical aid, which is really just a general aid. We have special education aid that supports specific programs and really personnel within our special education program.
And Aaron, you know, Dave's talking about how this can be really challenging to explain to people, kind of how this formula works, and how even when they see, you know, new investments or more money in public education, that it doesn't always mean that it's going to help every school district. Do you think that's the case that we're seeing this year in changes as, you know, Governor Walker has introduced his proposal for state funding. Do you feel like the proposal that has been laid out for next year or for the next biennial budget is going to be kind of the same in that it's not going to help every school district or be as positive for every school district?
Once again, as Dave has said, any money is much appreciated in this time, and being able to do something new and maintain what we are doing is critical. And I think the issue arises in how the money is given to schools. When it is categorical based on the number of students in your school district, everyone is benefited equally in a way. But at the same time, there are school districts that need more aid than others based on a whole range of factors, including property values and declining enrollment, transportation issues. And by applying that money to all students, all schools equally, it doesn't take into account all of the factors that the revenue limit formula does take into account. And so by not allowing school districts to increase their revenue limits, by instead just placing it categorically on every school district, it ignores a lot of very important factors that go into school funding.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the potential impacts of Governor Walker's proposed budget on regional public schools. We're here with Westby School District Administrator Chuck Norton, Cashton School District Administrator Dave Bell, and GET School District Administrator Aaron Engel. And Chuck, what are your thoughts on the proposal from Governor Walker for, this new money, the $650 million more in state funding? How do you think it's going to impact Westby School District?
Well, first I want to echo, as Aaron mentioned, that we're grateful for any additional dollars that we do get. And in terms of Westby's impact to Westby, it's roughly around $200,000 additional money. Now, as I look at our renewal for our budget for next year and the numbers of students that, for example, we've seen a large influx of students with mental health issues coming into our district, much deeper in terms of difficult special education students, not difficult students, but difficult to manage their needs without additional staffing. And those kinds of issues, as I look at this upcoming budget and renewals of health insurance policies, things of that nature, I look at that. Our district right now is probably looking at about an $800,000 deficit for the upcoming school year. $200,000 will definitely go a long ways to help us to offset some of that. But certainly you can see from that we've got challenges ahead and trying to understand how we're going to meet the needs of all of our students while at the same time be a district that we want to be a district of destination, a district where parents and families want to bring their students to. And to be that in this competitive environment with school choice, we need to broaden what we do, not continue and maintain what we do, but broaden our curricular options, broaden our options in terms of students maybe even outside our curriculum and vocational placements, things of that nature that we have a great vision in our district for a lot of the things that we'd like to do. But our inability to fund it and our inability to really make those things happen, this budget for next year, $200,000 will help, but certainly we've got a long ways to go. And I'm going to be honest, some of that money is going to be offset by asking our staff members to take more of responsibility, for example, for their healthcare costs. And we've continued to do that over the last several years of making adjustments like that. But I can tell you that many of us, and all three of us around the table, have probably used, as they say, all the silver bullets that are really in our holsters. And how many more things can we adjust and really manipulate to balance the budget? I don't know. And I, in our district, are looking at April of 18 as a rather large referendum opportunity to really propose to our tax base or our voters in our district a multitude of things to address curricular enhancements, safety and security enhancements for our schools, because that's so paramount importance, as well as facility upgrades and maintenance needs that have been ignored for a long time. So we're going to ask our local public to help us do that. And you can see through across our state with the most recent numbers of referenda that have been passed that the general public, for the most part, is very willing to spend more on their public education and their public schools. So I question why in the end, why hasn't those legislators decided that maybe it's time to address this need through a new formula, through a new commitment to our public schools to actually fund them at a level that's sustainable and does meet the needs long term, now and in the future?
Dave, do you feel like we're seeing more schools turning to referendums to meet these costs? And I wonder what your thoughts are on the role of those, you know, of the local public funding and kind of needs, you know, being met by the state funding.
Sure. You know, I think one thing that it does is it can have a disequalizing component. So if we have certain school districts that have a strong mobilized base, strong support for public schools, they're able to have that override function, and other school districts maybe don't have that, and so there's that balance. However, you know, that also you can look at it the other way and say that really that's that local choice piece, and I think there's value to that, and I think we all value that as you know, our local school board and local school leaders to be able to have a say in how we set our budget, and if we feel that there's expanded needs, that process of going to the public and saying, hey, these are our needs, this is where we are at right now, is this something that does the community share that vision or not? And I think that that's a good process. I just think that people are noting the increase in not necessarily the capital referendums where it's a building project, but just the operating expenses and the continual process that a lot of school districts have to go through. And a lot of that stems from, you know, the revenue limit a long time ago and not being able to kind of stay up depending on where they started when revenue limits came in.
Aaron, State Superintendent Tony Evers has, praise Governor Walker's budget for allocating more money to all school districts, but he's voiced concerns about how rural school districts will be impacted. I don't know. Do you feel like, when it comes down to it, the new $650 million added to state funding, does it kind of put rural districts at a disadvantage?
I think it can. Once again, there's so many factors that go into the funding of schools. Depending on the size of your school district, you might have much higher transportation costs. Depending on the property values in your school district, that has a huge role to play as well. If you're in a property-rich school district, like in the Minocqua area with all the lakes and the tourism, there's a lot of property value, which affects the funding formula. And it also affects your ability to go to referendum. A lot of the residents that are there in the summer aren't there during the rest of the school year. And so it affects your ability to go to referendum and pass something like that. In the Gale Electric Trempealeau area, we have residents that have been very supportive of the school district. We have a referendum that we're operating under. If it weren't for that, we would have had to make probably another $1 million in cuts. But fortunately, they have supported us and we're able to operate through that. I think that, what some of the messages that I've heard from Superintendent Evers is that the proposed funding model exacerbates or creates inequities. There are school districts that will be winners and others that will be losers, and the people that end up suffering the most are kids. They aren't able to go and vote for an increase in the revenue limits. They aren't able to go out and levy more money. And so while the parents or the community members of a particular district may not want to fund their schools, the ones that are left without a high quality education are students, even though they need it as well as every other community does.
And Dave, you know, we've been talking about issues faced by rural school districts and each of your school districts, but I wonder if you have thoughts on challenges that all schools in the state of Wisconsin are facing right now.
Well, one thing I'd add to the rural piece is the specific proposals targeted for rural schools, and we really view that as a positive. The increase in sparsity aid, the increase in high cost transportation aid, some of the TEACH grants available to expand our broadband access, those types of initiatives are positive. I think the increase in sparsity aid really identifies some of the unique needs to rural schools, whether it's transportation, whether it's retaining teachers, or whether it's finding teachers for challenging areas, some of the embedded costs that go with running a rural school. I think that's really positive.
Can you explain just briefly, kind of what that sparsity aid looks like and what it takes? I know you've kind of started to list those, but.
You bet. So sparsity aid is geared for districts that are sparsely populated, right? So schools qualify if they are less than 725 FTEs or full-time equivalent students, and they have to meet a requirement as far as how many students they have per square mile. And so if you have a low enough number of students per square mile, you qualify for that aid, and it's just a separate categorical aid then that can go to offset costs that are unique to rural schools. And so Governor Walker, in the last budget cycle, increased the amount of sparsity aid and committed again to do that. So that's something too, when you talk about the initial proposal, it's exciting and it's something that we see as a positive for a district that would get that aid. But we're also cautious because we're in the first part of the race here, so we don't really know how that will interplay when the legislating begins. And so it's definitely something that we see as a positive. High cost transportation aid, same thing. You qualify if your transportation expenses are above 150% of the average costs. So again, it's recognizing that some school districts to get kids in are going to have greater expenses.
That's Cashton School District Administrator Dave Bell here with us today to talk about proposed changes to K-12 funding in the next state budget. Also joining us is Westby School District Administrator Chuck Norton and GET School District Administrator Aaron Engel. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And I, started to ask about Dave about, kind of challenges that are faced by all school districts. And so, Chuck, I wonder what your thoughts are on what are all schools in the state really needing from state funding or from their communities?
I think the thing that we're really needing right now and the thing that we're going to be focusing on in Westby is really community engagement. Coming together and discussing our individual needs and our focus on our longer-term goals and coming to a consensus agreement of where are we at today and where do we want to be 5-10 years from now, and then collectively making a plan on together, whether it's through referendum or whatever it might be, through collaborations with local businesses and so forth, to meet those needs and to project what the vision's going to be. So that's something I'm really excited about. We've had a rather grand plan in our district to start that conversation over the next year and to develop, an alliance, an agreement, and a collective vision of really our long-term purpose and our goals. So it's going to be a fun experience, and we're really working on partnerships right now to develop that. Because it's quite obvious to us that without that deep, deep understanding and support of our local communities, that we may fail. And without that collective agreement and collective commitments, it could be tough. So, even though Dave is my neighbor, he and I are ultimately in competition right now. And that's really, and Dave would probably agree, that's not what we really started out, to really do. We wanted to focus on our districts to make them the strongest and the best and the greatest outcomes for students, districts that we could make them. But ultimately, as we kind of look for dollars and look for students, and the enrollment numbers are so very important, it's become kind of a competitive business, and it's something that I have a deep business background, and it makes me kind of unique in the world in the field of education. But I never imagined when I moved to this profession that I have to pull out some of those tools in that old toolkit and start using them again. So it's an interesting kind of situation we're in right now.
Aaron, do you feel that pressure to compete with neighboring school districts, and how do you think it's impacted GET?
The open enrollment process and the increased funding for open enrollment or choice has definitely created another added pressure for school districts. We have more students open enroll out of our school district than we have come in. We have very few that choose school choice to go to a private school. But we definitely pay attention to those numbers, as it represents a significant dollar amount that we lose in funding in paying that to other school districts. At the same time, our school board has talked about this issue, and we're focused on trying to keep the students that are in our school district. We're less interested in attracting residents from other school districts, but mostly just ensuring that we provide a high-quality education for the students that live in our school district in the first place. And our goal is simply to attract and retain those families and those students. We're not interested in, trying to attract residents from other school districts and getting into that highly competitive nature, just providing the best possible education for the students that live in our district.
Dave, do you think that we're going to see more competition among schools as these, funding measures are considered? Do you worry that that's just going to continue to increase?
Sure. Well, the competition piece is interesting because if you live in sort of densely populated areas, you might have 5-6 districts to choose from with a reasonable commute. So that's nice for those areas. If you live in a rural area, you maybe have one other school district that's realistically an option, and you may not even have a private school option. So we talk about choice. Choice is kind of a thing that focuses more on students who live in higher populated areas. So I think that we're in a world now where we have to focus on customer service and really delivering a positive product, which we always have and will continue to do. But I think every school district is in tune to that and really being aware of what are the needs of their students are at each age level and really delivering on that. But do I think it's going to become less? No, I think the prediction is correct that we're going to be in a more choice-driven time, and that's schools, but that's also lots of other things within our society right now.
Cashton School District Administrator Dave Bell is here with us today to talk about how regional school districts could be affected by upcoming changes to state funding for public schools. He's joined by Westby School District Administrator Chuck Norton and GET School District Administrator Aaron Engel. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about funding for public education. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Governor Scott Walker has increased funding for the state's public schools by $650 million in the next state budget. This funding would be paid out to schools on a per-student basis. Walker says this equal approach keeps school districts from having to raise property taxes, but some education advocates worry the plan puts rural school districts at a disadvantage. Joining us to talk about the proposed state budget and how it could impact regional schools are Chuck Norton, administrator for the Westby School District, Dave Bell, administrator for the Cashton School District, and Aaron Engel, administrator of the Gail Ettrick Trempealeau School District. And in the first half, we heard from Chuck about how, Governor Walker's budget proposal would impact Westby, learning that Westby would receive $200,000 in aid, but, is looking at losing $800,000. And so, I wonder if, Dave, if you want to share kind of the numbers on how the state budget could impact your school district.
We're predicting we're a smaller district, so there's going to be less of an increase. But we're predicting an increase anywhere from 125 to 175,000. There's a lot of variables still out there. We don't know our complete enrollment picture until the third Friday count in September. So our budget year starts on July 1. We start the process of spending money, but we don't exactly know what our total aid will be. We don't know what our total revenue limit will be because we haven't established our enrollment. And that's just, sort of part of the deal. But when we throw out numbers, I always try to qualify that to say, well, we don't really know. Last year, this time I was predicting a flat headcount increase, and we ended up growing by 33 kids. So those things can be unexpected sometimes, and you don't really know where you stand. And that also makes it really hard when you're talking about budgeting and making the decisions about staffing. So we're starting, and I'm sure a lot of school districts are pretty well down the road on what their staffing will be for next year. But we don't know, so we have to set our staffing, but we don't really know what our overall revenue is yet. So there's a lot of hypotheticals that get put out there. But that's where we stand right now, and that's really a combination of the per pupil categorical increase for all schools, but also some of the rural aids that we predict that we'll qualify for.
And Aaron, what are you guys anticipating from this proposal?
We're anticipating an increase of about $275,000 in the categorical aid, and that's based on population, so we're a little bit bigger than Cashton, so that accounts for the difference in categorical aid. Despite being rural, we don't actually qualify for much of the rural schools initiative funding. So the high-cost transportation aid, we don't qualify for that, nor the sparsity aid. So the sole source of revenue we'd really be considering as we look at our budget for next year is the per pupil categorical aid that Governor Walker has proposed.
Why does GET not qualify for some of those different aids?
For the sparsity aid, while we have kind of a sparsely populated school district, the threshold for qualifying for it is less than 725 students in your school district. And Governor Walker has proposed an additional threshold of 1,000, but at 1,380 students, we simply don't qualify. And that makes sense to a certain extent because the purpose of that funding is to benefit those that are the smallest, most populated, most least populated school districts. So that makes sense to me. And with high cost transportation aid, once again, that is directed towards school districts that have the most need. And our school district is right about the state average for transportation costs, and the intent is for those that have 150% of the state average. So once again, just by chance and good fortune in a way, we don't qualify for those programs.
And talking about this increased funding that Governor Walker has proposed for public schools, he has said that this funding increase has come from reform dividends. So money that has been saved through previous reductions in funding to areas and cost-cutting measures in the state. And public education has seen both of those in the sense of seeing reductions in state funding, but also cost-cutting measures like Act 10, the collective bargaining law. And Chuck, I wonder, and kind of looking big picture at, reforms and the increase in funding now, does it all kind of come out in the wash or kind of where are we at?
Well, going back to the Act 10, they were referred to as the tools. We were given tools to offset, which in my district at the time was a $700,000 cut in aid. In one fell swoop, bang, over 1 year. That's how it was applied. And the tools were ultimately the opportunity to, shouldn't say opportunity, but the situation of asking our staff members to take more responsibility for health care costs and benefits. Those were one-time use tools. They were enacted in that 1 year. Certainly those are ongoing adjustments. Asking our staff to really absorb a great majority of our health care costs or much more than ever paid before. But then going forward, even though those were in place for many years, that doesn't help us year over year. Really in the end, the fact that there's no adjustment to the revenue caps, that per pupil increases in terms of categorical aids have been minimal at best. And if you add all those things together, the $200,000 that we project, actually it's probably more like 220, but I'm just very much rounding it. We're not even back to where we were many years ago. So there's a lot of ground to make up. And we don't expect that to really necessarily happen, but a recognition of the fact that so much has been asked of us over many years in terms of adjustments, whether it's the district itself or our staff to take on responsibility for some of their own for healthcare costs in particular. Again, that was a one-time use situation, and they have carried forward to some degree. but not nearly as much as what, quite honestly, the public's been led to believe. And we continue to find creative ways to offset these additional costs and make ends meet. And as I was sharing with my cohort here just a moment ago, we're really kind of running out of options to do. And I mentioned it earlier, how many more bullets, silver bullets are left? There's not many. And we are now looking at definitely referendum, asking our local taxpayers to take on and value our public schools to the point of saying, yes, we'll come up and pay for more. But I think one of the things that was talked about earlier is the funding formula is so weighted on property values. And if you're in a district such as was mentioned Minocqua, but I'll bring it even closer to our local community. There's a small community of DeSoto right on the Mississippi River, not too far from my district. And they have very high property values there because it's beautiful country and it's land that's cherished. But ultimately what that does is then the formula says because you have high property values, therefore you must have individuals of high income that can actually pay that. But really, truly, the individuals that work and they actually live there year-round can't afford high taxes. Really, it's an inequity there that really in the end is misjudged because there's an assumption that there are dollars there from the average person that needs to pay the taxes that sends their children to our schools, but actually they're not. So big picture is there needs to be adjustments and recognitions of these inequities and how funding is generated for our schools. We need a stable amount that's going to be provided through the state in terms of maybe a minimum amount of money that they're willing to put forward per pupil, and then adjustments to take into consideration just exactly what I described is inequities that relate to high property values, yet the average income is in the area could be down to poverty level, and how are they really going to make ends meet?
Dave, you know, Chuck has been mentioning kind of how these reforms have impacted staff at Westby. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how, you know, previous reforms and cost-cutting measures have impacted, you know, the staff at Cashton.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you go back, I think the general, obviously that was a challenging time, right? So there was a lot being talked about with public schools, and I think that one of the hardest pieces was the overall feeling that that teachers or school employees were, I think the feeling from staff was maybe unfairly targeted as being, you know, overcompensated or needing to pay their fair share. And I think that ultimately choices are made at the legislature and we at the local level have to work hard to help our teachers understand what their role is in that and then try to build that positive culture around it. So I think we really focused on that and focused on our positives within our school district. And you know, there's some things that are out of our control and we're going to not worry about the things that are out of our control. We're going to do a good job of communicating to our school employees the requirements that are set forth by the state, do that, and then also create an environment within our school district where teachers do feel valued and all school employees, not just teachers, support staff, because that's the other piece that sometimes is left out is, we focus on teachers, but a lot of these reforms also influence and affect support staff, and sometimes support staff, their wages are lower than teachers, and so any adjustments or changes to their take-home compensation, when you talk about health insurance, or you talk about contributions to their retirement plan, that's a big impact. And so we're really cognizant of that, and tried to, when we captured savings from Act 10, to roll those savings into continually creating a strong school district that employees want to be a part of, families and students want to be a part of.
That's Cashton School District Administrator Dave Bell here with us today to talk about proposed changes to K-12 funding in the next state budget. Also joining us is Westby School District Administrator Chuck Norton and GET School District Administrator Aaron Engel. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Aaron, I know that in the past you have said that, at the beginning of this school district, that one effect of the Act 10 in some ways cost-cutting measure was this idea that it kind of changed the climate around public education around and teachers as kind of where they fit in the state and how that's impacted, I guess, the number of teachers that are coming into the field of public education. And so I wonder if you can talk a little bit about kind of what you're seeing in, you know, teachers applying to positions at GET and kind of, I guess, applicants available.
Certainly. Around Act 10, it created a kind of a negative atmosphere related to teaching and the teaching profession. It was unfortunate for any number of reasons. And as a result of that, a lot of veteran teachers retired early in some cases, or, you know, when it was maybe a natural time. And we also have our baby boomer group coming through, and they're reaching retirement age. And so between Act 10 and natural retirements, we saw a significant decline in the teacher pool. Along with this negative atmosphere, we also saw fewer college students going into education because it seemed less attractive to them. And so the result has been in our school district, you know, we posted for a fifth grade position, which is an elementary position that would typically be very attractive for a lot of people. You know, we're located in the Cooley region. It's a great place to live, and it's near La Crosse. We might have had 100 or 50 applicants potentially for that job, and this last year we had 10. You know, so we saw, you know, almost an order of magnitude less of applicants for a particular position. And in fact, this summer, we had two positions that we ended up unable to fill, and we hired long-term subs that were highly qualified. But, you know, we're still at this point in the school year, two-thirds of the way through, trying to find people for those positions. And certain positions are more difficult to fill than others. Elementary, that is, you know, relatively broad, there might be a better candidate pool, but for special education or music or art, it can be very difficult to find any candidate to fill those jobs. And so that has made it very challenging. In some ways, it might end up being good for teachers. You know, they talk about teacher free agency and the ability to move from one school district to another and command a higher wage as a result. But for school districts and for our kids, it's oftentimes a net negative. There's less stability, and oftentimes we have positions that go unfilled, or we have to look at larger class sizes in order to make do.
Chuck, has the Westby School District been impacted by a shortage of teachers?
No, most definitely. We, as I would echo Aaron, for the last, I would say, at least 3 years, we started the school year with long-term subs in positions that we were unable to fill. And I would absolutely agree the candidate pool has so diminished. And when you talk to students that are interested in the field of education or people that you thought were at one time but then pulled back, you ask them the question, really, why is that? And really, it's tough for them to really get down to it, but they've really recognized the fact that the respect for the position, the respect that you would one time felt as a teacher, and you're proud to say it in a community, the respect is really diminished to such a great degree, because throughout the world of Act 10, there was a lot of punishing tones and talk coming from a lot of different angles of disrespect for teachers, that they felt they were overcompensated, that they had too many benefits, that they had too much control in terms of their future with regard to unionization. So, but here we are, how many years later, and we are still in a very, very difficult time filling positions. And I would add to that, beyond even our difficulty, because we're the same. We would see 100, 150 applicants for a simple fifth, third grade elementary position, and now we might see 35, 40, something like that. But then when we filter down through those applicants, to be quite honest, the numbers that we really want to bring in for an interview and have a talk with are getting very tough to find, because the quality of the pool and is getting pretty tough. And even beyond that, those that we've chosen, our success rate, in other words, those that go through their first year of education, maybe even into their second, the numbers that have actually decided, yes, this works for me, has probably got down to about 50%. So I'd probably say half. It's very difficult to find a new educator. to find one that wants to, we live in a beautiful area, but then there's so many other drivers, whether it's relationships and family, but we find one that wants to be here, I would say probably only about 50% are really finding it their life's profession. So it's a very, very difficult climate right now to maintain staffing at a school. And, we talk about teachers, but that's also applicable to our many support staff. We have so many other support staffs throughout the system that operate a school. It is our bus drivers, our custodians, our health services individuals, our food service, and aides in the classroom. Every level, we are finding it extremely difficult to maintain those levels for a multitude of reasons. And honestly, Act 10 had a lot to do with it.
You know, talking about previous changes to public education, but you know, as we turn back and look at the budget proposal for the next biennial budget, you know, Aaron, what is your sense of whether we're going to see support for this proposal from lawmakers, or whether they have different ideas about how we should be looking at public education funding?
I think there's going to be a vigorous debate in the legislature this year regarding how this budget turns out. I think that there are some that are strong advocates for public education, both Republicans and Democrats, that would be interested in passing legislation similar to what Governor Walker has proposed. But I know that there's also competing interests, and without new sources of revenue, it's going to be difficult to meet all of those. Transportation budgets have been cut in years past, and I think there's an intent to work on that as well. I hope that education continues to be a priority. If our government wants to continue looking into the future, ensuring that our students are prepared for the next types of jobs that are out there and for the new economy, they're going to need to ensure that we have the money necessary to prepare students. But I think it could be a very contentious budget, as it typically is, and I'm hoping that schools come out on top.
Yeah. Yeah, and Dave, I wonder what your thoughts are on, as we go into the next budget of, why lawmakers and why the public should really be paying attention to funding for public schools.
Sure. I think the initial proposal is a sign that our legislators understand the impact that public schools have on their communities and on the state of Wisconsin. And I think it's a recognition of some of the work that was done by our legislators to say, look, this needs to be a priority, and we need to have a vision for funding public education that is supportive. And I think it's a good start. And I think, like what Aaron said, we're a long way away from really understanding what the final budget will look like, and I hope is that what doesn't happen is we feel like we have to get into this debate with other needs, because I think we all recognize that there is other needs, and we just need to find a way to fit how public education fits into that, but not necessarily get into one entity fighting against another.
Chuck, is there anything that isn't being talked about in this this budget debate and discussions that, you really feel like lawmakers should be keeping in mind?
One of the things that Governor Walker brings forward is a multitude of changes to licensure for teaching staff, and what the avenues are for new individuals coming into the profession, what thresholds might they have to cross to get a license. And I think he started to recognize, and the legislature started to recognize, that schools, just as I mentioned before, are having a very difficult time attracting and retaining staff. And I applaud some of the ideas with regard to alternative avenues, whether it's a long business background that you've operated a business and therefore you have a lot of business ed educational background that we could transfer into a business ed environment. But when we water it down to a point where it gets, actually, I think Aaron's participating in a relicensure, a licensure program pilot that puts a lot of the responsibility, or some of the responsibility, on schools now to make a determination of whether or not an individual should be granted. I'm not sure, Aaron, whether that's initial or whether it's just continuing. But I'm concerned about having quality educators in front of our students, and I'm concerned about actually the rush to find more individuals to come into the schools to work, and actually the quality of them. What is that going to maintain the high standards that we really, that our students deserve, our community expects, and for us to continue to move forward and higher and brighter? I'm concerned about that, and I think that's something that needs to be talked about a little bit more. Is yes, we can make it easier to get into the classroom, but if it's not making the positive difference for students, that concerns me. So I think there needs to be more thought on that. I think there needs to be other considerations brought to the forefront than just simply bringing in individuals.
We've been talking with Chuck Norton, administrator for the Westby School District, Dave Bell, administrator for the Cashton School District, and Aaron Engel, administrator for the Gail Ettrick Trempealeau School District, about the challenges faced by rural school districts and how they could be affected by K-12 funding changes in the next state budget. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.